This is another mashup video, and I'm taking a segment from my conversation with Redeem Zoomer and putting it next to a segment of my conversation with Jordan Hall. And this very much does continue to follow the conversation on ecclesiology and institutions, because Redeem Zoomer makes a I like his argument. I'm in that sense, myself and Aaron Wren, we're on the same team as Redeem Zoomer, that part of what certain segments of the church have done to sort of abandon institutions. That's very popular today. Many people are abandoning institutions. Many people have found institutions to be discredited. Many people don't trust institutions. This isn't just the church. These are schools. These are governments. Many, many institutions in our lives we no longer trust. These institutions were made in the modern world. And these institutions have deep modern code in them. And as modernity continues to recede, that code is going to get funny and things are going to change. Now, the John Baer, maybe I should reach out to him, have him on, talk about that article. That would be kind of fun. Orthodox and Catholic, they're also wrestling with institutions. Everyone is wrestling with institutions. And to some degree, of course, there's very old code in Catholic and Orthodox institutions. There's codes of varying age in Protestant institutions. Protestant institutions have tended to be shorter lived, more flexible. Protestants sort of often treat institutions like paper bags. We create them and we dispose of them. We create them and we dispose of them. Institutions in the Orthodox seem fairly chaotic. Really interested in how that works. Roman Catholic, big conversations about institutions, pretty much ongoing. And so Redeemed Zoomer notes that a big piece of the reason the mainline had so much power and sort of created the American Empire were institutions, and conservatives abandoned those institutions, and then mainline institutions are certainly not what they were. And now the United Methodist Church, another church that is, I just read Juicy Ecumenicity, their article that basically says, well, it's over. It's over. And so now you have these tiny little fragmented institutions. Yet one of the interesting things that I said to Redeem Zoomer is that, yeah, but look at what you're doing. People in these mainline institutions are terrified, I would imagine, at some level of Redeemed Zoomer. Because, yeah, it might be tiny and small now, but they realize that a 21-year-old with a cell phone and a laptop, with an Instagram account and a YouTube account, can really do things. And, of course, Jordan Hall is thinking, when he really gets going, I mean, his span of thinking is so vast, it's civilizational. That entire Game B project really fascinates me, because what the players in the Game B space saw were what most of us just don't see. But they pull out so far that they see these big tectonic shifts. And again, what's so fascinating about Jordan Hall is I think he embodies what is to come in that he sees all of these tectonic shifts, and what people often do is they sort of retreat and bunker away and hover down. And what Jordan Hall did with his family is dive in to the church, a local church, that sort of connects up with Baer's argument in that piece. So here are these two clips, and I'm going to put them side by side. And I think when you put them side by side, interesting things happen, and I won't disrupt them with commentary. Maybe commentary will follow. Anyway, I'll leave a comment and let me know what you think of this. The difficulty is we're trying to conceptualize something that is invisible. Because part of what's happened for me over the last 6 years of whatever it is that's been happening to me with YouTube and all the stuff I've been involved with is we're struggling to reconceptualize how the world works. And because not only not only have churches sort of had institute, I mean, this crisis of institutions is, I mean, it's all over our, it's, you know, medical institutions, government institutions, educational institutions. And part of this has been that there's been deep, these institutions are themselves the products of modernity. And the philosophical epistemic underpinnings of modernity have been receding, and these institutions are falling. Now, Catholics and Orthodox tend to rush in and say, no, 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 we know how to do this. And the rest of us are looking at them skeptically, like, we're not ready to buy into your program. But yeah, what's difficult to know is, okay, what emerges next? Because again, I tend to suspect we're going to have new forms of institutions emerge that, in keeping sort of with all other disrupted patterns, there's going to be elements of the old, but then also innovation of the new that's going to be able to sort of help things go. Because if you think about, let's say I look at the Christian Reformed Church, I sort of collect Christian Reformed books from the Christian Reformed Church of when I was a kid. And I look at them now through my eyes and it's like, wow. Because one of the main things that one of the main ways denominations sort of held things together were you have a printing house in your denomination.
Yeah.
And your denomination produces all of the materials, the Sunday school materials, the magazine, the theological books. You have a denominational seminary. And so you sort of have a walled garden here, and you produce everything that your denomination eats. That whole system has been coming apart for the last 50 years. And as we've seen, people are feeding out of a marketplace, not out of a walled garden. They've been feeding out of a marketplace. And what we've seen then is these broad movements, like we've seen, you know, that's sort of lately manifested in, let's say, wokeism. This has been capturing institutions. And then you're not going to be able to keep score by looking at what denominational publishing house things are coming out of. Now you're keeping score by looking at what segment of a marketplace things are coming out of. And what that means is the old way we used to organize was within the walls of a building. The Christian Reformed Church is in the process of selling its denominational building. And when I saw, for example, the successor institution or a successor institution to the Reformed Church in America, the Alliance of Reformed Churches, I know the guys who started this thing, and I'm pretty sure they started it with a cell phone and a laptop. They didn't need a building because they can rent space or whatever, because now we're sort of living on the internet, just like you and I are doing now. And so I think we have to not only wrestle with, okay, this abandonment of institutions by conservatives, we have to wrestle with what on earth are institutions going to be and look like moving forward? And pretty buildings are probably going to have to be a part of it, but we don't quite know how they fit in.
Right. I mean, I know things are getting more online, but it's still just as institutional. Like, for example, when I try to read theology papers from the University of Edinburgh, I still have to pay to read them. Whereas if I don't want to pay, if I just want to like do things for free, I only get surface level stuff. So regardless, yeah, the internet is probably going to change what institutions look like. But I, even so, there's still going to be value in institutions. I do think in some ways I'm the biggest hypocrite in the world because I'm talking about the value of institutions. Meanwhile, I function as a digital Anabaptist. I built up my YouTube channel off of nothing, and I talk about issues I'm not formally educated on. So in some sense, I'm a massive hypocrite because of what I do in my online presence.
I
And
don't
it's
think I wouldn't call that hypocrisy. I think you are, in fact, embodying the new wave. But you
right.
also have not gone Anabaptist in that, you still value institutions. It's just unclear. So Reconquista, Operation Reconquista. Now, did you start this thing?
Yes.
How did you start it?
I started it online, really. It started out as an online Instagram group chat of like three people. And then it moved to a Discord server of a few hundred people. Then that turned into 1,000, that turned to a few thousand. And then we started some nonprofits emerged out of our Discord server. I started a nonprofit with some other PCUSA members at the very end of 2023 called Presbyterians for the Kingdom. And we just attended a conference in our denomination. The Episcopals did something similar
And
and
you
got
are
a lot
how
of
old?
21. And we got they got I met a lot of Episcopal bishops who like what we're doing. The Bishop of Dallas is great, and the Episcopal, so thanks to the like we wouldn't have been able to do this quickly without the internet, but it kind of feels like easy come, easy go to me, because the internet can
Yeah.
give you I'll be surprised if anyone still watches my videos in 5 years, because that's the way the internet works.
But I won't be surprised if you are still doing, I would be surprised if you're not doing vital work in 5 years.
Well, thank you. But I still think at the end of the day, it is going to be institutions that matter more, because yes, it is the internet that spreads a lot of ideas. And thanks to the internet, a lot of young men are becoming a lot more conservative than they ever have been due to like the trad movements and stuff. But they still lack institutional power. So no matter what they do, the powers that be are still always going to be pushing to the left until something changes in the institutions.
Yeah, and I would bet that a lot of those people sitting in pretty buildings are terrified by you. Because in some ways you are the Zuckerberg or Jobs or Bill Gates of ecclesiology right now. Because you are disrupting, using technology in a viral way, the institutions. The difficulty is you shouldn't feel so bad because this is going to happen anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, I just did a conversation this week with Jordan Hall, and we were talking about, I'm probably going to have it out on the channel next Monday, but we were talking about basically the MP3 revolution. And you're not old enough to remember this. I'm old enough to remember this. When digital audio compression met the music industry, it was chaos because it was just the end of the record. Now, the record is still around. The vinyl record is still around. The CD is still around. The Blu-ray is still around. But fundamentally, everything changed. And we are in that kind of a change in terms of the church now, and not just institutions of the church. So, and again, what struck me that you, and I don't know if you did this consciously, but it seemed to me exactly the right choice that you made to say, and you had skin in the game, me and my family. And in fact, it's not just going to be me telling my wife what to do, but my wife and I, we're going to be a team in this, and we're going to look for, and I'm just going to use this word, even though I've just worked it over pretty hard in my last week's sermon. We're gonna look for salvation by putting our skin in the game and not just thinking about communities around the world, but actually going into one. I mean, in a sense, it was the incarnational move, saying that we have to incarnate if we're actually going to know anything. And it seems to me what you've done.
Yeah, I was noticing even just as I was, let's see, I guess I went for a walk today. Yeah. And it was going through my head of, oh, that's right. I'm yesterday, my daughter and I were taking a long walk, and we ran into a couple who had moved here from Boston almost the same time we moved here. We called them Team Boston. And hi, Team Boston, if you watch this.
Mm
And in my mind, I didn't, this didn't happen. In my mind, I was thinking about a conversation with him of, okay, how does this last year work out for you? And then I reflected on my own answer to that question. And the answer was something like, you know, we've been embraced and deeply integrated into this community, right? And both are key, right? We, you know, in some sense became conformed to the wineskin.
Yeah.
We've entered into it. But the beauty of this particular community, and it would only have worked because of this, it's also aware of and inviting a, how do you say, like a growth. It's inviting a kind of growth. It's not looking for something that is purely novel. It's not looking for artificiality. It's not looking to be like, you know, the big city or anything like that. But it's also aware of the necessity for it to have a certain quality or a certain kind of energy so that it can continue to thrive in the context of what's happening in the large, in the larger world and even in the region. And so we were willing, very willing, and much like a good couple, right? You come into a relationship with your wife, you're willing to transform utterly in that relationship. She's willing to transform utterly in that relationship, and therefore some new possibility emerges. And so actually not a bad, like it's very similar, like a symmetry there of that that reconciliation, like the big reconciliation theme. And Christ was willing to incarnate, right? And to undergo the full human experience as part of the process of coming into relationship with us as the body. And we there to enter into relationship with him must be willing to undergo an equivalent level of transformation to be brought forth in that. And that then creates the, what would that be, the consecration or the marriage that then forms that larger body.
Which is, of course, the biblical imagery of the book of Revelation. It's a marriage that God enters into with us. Now, what I'm really curious, because I know we're bumping up against the 2 hour time, and my dog's gonna have a limit in terms of what he can do, she can do. Wineskins and the church. Now, you've unlike many of us who have always sort of lived in the church, and that affords a certain degree of certain kinds of knowledge, but you've had a very different path. And you know, part of what I noticed, what part of what I've noticed in wineskins are a very big deal in church. And of course, Jesus has that parable of the new wine. You use new wineskins for new wine, old wineskins, and that of course becomes a metaphor for the church. What and one of the things that caught my ear in one of your interviews too was a question of scale, because part of the crisis of the church, and the church is always in crisis. I mean, that's the thing. Crisis is normal to church. You cannot read church history and find a time that crisis isn't there. It's always there. What are some of your observations, given your background, and now that you're at least just a little bit into church and the church world? What are some of your thoughts in terms of church and scale and wineskins?
Okay, so yeah, I like this notion the church is always in crisis. It makes sense because the church at the end of the day is always going to be the secular institution, and therefore, and remember, not remember, that's a silly thing to say. In my mind, when I think about wine, I think both about the marriage of Cana and the new wineskins parable, right?
Yes.
Because we're talking about the dude who is like new wine qua wine, right? He's a fountain of new wine. He's turning water into wine. And you imagine there's other stories that we use like zap, 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 like, you know, pond of wine, you know, rain of wine, whatever, brother. Because here's the point. I want to land on you. This is new wine, right? No wineskin is ever truly going to be adequate. Every time you think you got it, that new wine's coming even more. The
That's
more
right.
wineskin you got, the more wine I'm going to bring, right? So that makes sense. All right. So then the first would be kind of like a humility of saying, okay, well, fair enough. That means that the church has to be flexible, right? It has to have a capacity to grow, right? To, in some case, to transform, to have this, how would you call it? Mutation, polymorphic, maybe polymorphic is nice, like a sensibility of being able to actually respond to the reality that it's in while holding perfectly the eternal, right? So that's the balance, right? We don't want to hold the finite or the chronological as if it is eternal because it's not. But we have the eternal, so let's hold the eternal as eternal, right? And holding, make sure we actually hold them both properly is right. And then noticing how does this change in response to the reality of the context that it's in, so that it can probably become the wineskin for this as it flows into the moment, right? And it keeps flowing into the moment. So this is a, it actually feels like there's kind of like two elements, or sorry, three elements. We have the eternal, we have that which is intrinsically secular or bound to time, and then we have the, huh, interesting. Huh. Give me a second on that. I'm just noticing that I was just introduced to a triadic temporal structure that God is strictly eternal. And the Greek word was like, I can't remember what it was. It was a word that I'd never seen before. But the angels are of this whole other category, like the ion. We live like in the time that we're familiar with.
The ion is the age,
The age.
and eternal life in Greek, in the Gospel of John, is life of the age. It's, if you just want to kind of woodenly translate it, it's life of the age, and it's life of the age to come because you have the present age and the age to come.
Which is not the same as the category of the word that is used to describe the eternal in the Trinity, right? Because it's a different kind of eternal, because the angels don't live in that exactly. There's something different here. And so, yeah, so it's interesting. I don't understand that well enough to think to use it at all. And so I'm just putting it out there. But there's something about three movements here, that there's a way that is not necessarily strictly of the eternal, but participates, yeah, that's what it is, but participates in the architecture of the eternal and how to afford the translation of the eternal into the chronological.
Right. The angels need a ladder. Then you go back to Bethel. Jacob is running away from Esau. He lays his head on a rock. He's Bethel. Angels are going up and down the ladder. The angels need a ladder because there is a distance.
And am I correct in recalling that the angels were present to, for example, the gift giving of the commandments to Moses?
That is not a technically in the Bible. That is part of a tradition.
Okay. So, but that notion, right?
Well, no. It might be in Paul. So that might have come through Paul. So yeah.
But that notion seems proper in the sense of this. There's something about the eternal that is internal in nature. There's something about how the eternal is. This is very much like, if you think about it, it's, Christ. It is the Logos, actually, now that I think about it. This is the element whereby the eternal affords itself the ability to actually achieve relationality with that which is not eternal,
Right.
which the chronological couldn't possibly do. Right?
Right.
So we can't figure this shit out, but there's something here that is not the Father, but nonetheless can afford us. It is the Spirit and the Son that affords us the ability to adapt ourselves, so that we can now come into this and keep coming into this and keep coming into this. So we're drawn forth. So it's the theophany notion, but at the level of our structure, like the way that we embody ourselves as individuals and as groups, the church. Oh, neat. Yeah. So the church qua church, like the actual body, and then whatever institutional form happens to emerge around that. So it's like these shells. Golly, by the way, so Ortho Bros, at any point in time, if I need to be burned to the stake, just let me know. I'm not at all concerned about that.
But we need the Ortho Bros
And we do.
because, again, in some ways, they, in terms of the economy of the church, they sort of keep the eternal alive. And
That's
that's
right.
why they are having their function. We need
We
the
need
Ortho
that.
Bros. And that's, I
We need
think,
hardcore.
yeah. And I think that's part of the blessing that the sort of the new wave of orthodoxy into the conversation has been a tremendous blessing because you can't lose if the Protestants just keep going, they just fall off. So the orthos, you have to sort of, so that's why the church has a body like it has.
That's right. I agree. So what I have is I'm coming in into this world entirely digital first,
Yeah.
right? I have access to the books, right? I have the
Yeah.
scripture, I have the secondary and tertiary works, but digital first, right? Is the way I was introduced to it. And therefore I'm seeing the Orthodox, and I'm seeing all the different variations from Protestantism, and a handful, the Catholics, who don't seem to be showing up quite as much, as far as I can tell, in the digital first piece. And that's interesting, right? That's the nature of this medium. This medium is a truly global medium intrinsically.
Yes.
Everybody's part of it intrinsically. There's no way around that. And there's something going on that is intrinsically breaking up everything that was bound to language, everything that was bound to subculture, everything that was bound to region. and is endeavoring to reveal that which was part and parcel of the truly eternal that was manifesting itself in the particulars of that local environment. So as those old wineskins are broken up, that's, well, it's not Greek. Okay, fair enough. It's not Latin. Like we've broken that piece. There's something deeper to the word than the words. Oh, cool. What else is the deeper stuff? So that as that deeper stuff is beginning to naturally have to surface, because so much of the other structures are just being broken apart because of the nature of the new milieu and all the other elements of the context. The discovery of that, the earnest endeavor to actually discern what is being held in each of these locations, so that the greater body can bring it together, and the new body is forming. That there is a new body that must be forming. It's intrinsically impossible for it not to be the case. And it can't be the kind of thing that is an imperial downward causation, right? It's not going to be like, oh, turns out these guys were right. They won. We're all this now. We're all, I don't know, let's go with Seventh-day Adventists. Turns out, remember, what was it? That South Park movie? I think it was the South Park movie, right? Like they die, and it turns out that actually it was, the Mormons that were right all along. That's not how it works. It works like this. Everybody was actually wrong all along, but a little bit right. Neat. Some new structure is going to come along that's going to ameliorate the wrongness, accentuate and build out the rightness, bring that rightness into a deeper integration and a deeper form of wholeness, which is not going to be of the same institutional form at all as the institutional forms that emerged in the period of orality, of scribality, and in particular of print. Right? It's going to be a new institutional form altogether. It will look like a network of networks, by the way. We know that. That's not complicated. That's sort of obviously true. What that means precisely is a little bit more difficult to suss out, but it'll be much more personal, right? And the structure will have the ability to be hyperlocal because networks of networks have that fluidity much more effectively. It'll be much more capable of being grounded in real relationality because that is also more fully afforded. It'll be intrinsically anti-ideological for lots of different reasons that we can talk about. So we can do that. Like we can do that work of talk. This is like what the Gamby work largely was okay, what are the design principles? What are the design characteristics? What things are can we rule out? What are the things that are part of like the constraints, the negative constraints? What are the positive constraints, the things that we can rule in? And then we can use that to describe what the structural form is. And now what I now know is that, and the content, let's say, or the spirit is the Holy Spirit, right? And it's that, and that's going on. And FYI, between us, this will obviously have to include all of the other things that are sometimes known as religions.
Oh wow, that was a fire hose. I'm gonna have to listen to that much more carefully as but I think you're right, because to go all the way back to where we began, the revelation that you had as a child, and the as that the authorities in Hamburger World were not the authorities in Hamburger World were corrupt. And the Protestant Reformation gets going because authorities in Latindom were corrupt. And there's been plenty of, I mean, I'm not trying to play a Protestant Catholic game here. Plenty of corrupt
40 even
Protestants.
corrupt, yeah. It
Corruption is not hard to find.
corrupt for like a few minutes, and then okay, now it's
That's
time.
right. That's right. And so then the, well, let's bring it then back down to the personal, because again, and I think this is to your credit, a lot of people that I talk to, that they want to, well, I would, I'm pro church, but I don't actually attend one. And the difficulty, of course, you have is, I think you're right in terms of a network of networks. The thing is, you can't live just between the networks. You have to be in a network. And again, that network, as much as possible, should be embodied.
We would call them friends. You need friends, man. You really do. And you need friends that are not digital friends. I hate to say it. This,
Yes.
I like you. This is really fun. I really enjoy meeting
Yep.
you. This is not enough for humans. We
No,
need
that's right.
real live actual friends that break bread and hug and cry together.
That's right. No, that's right. That's right. That's right. And strangely, this is something that needs to be said, because I don't know that we would need to say it 200 years ago.
No.
But here we are.
We might have to say it 2 years ago because it's so obvious that
Yeah.
it would be shocking that you could even say it.
Yeah.
And now we're on the other side of that arc.
Yeah.
The catchphrase I say people, I say go to church. And what I mean by that is, in some ways, it's you have to engage in the human relationships around you. That's like the best way to go about that. You know, you have relationship, you have a family, you have some kind of community around you. And so that's the best place to go, because in some ways that's the place that will have this procedural aspect to it that will ground the other stuff. You know, it's like if you have to, you know, to help your kids with their homework, or you have to do this kind of really grounded stuff that has nothing, that's very little to do with the ideology, you get engaged in other people's lives, then it binds you in a different way, right? It binds you.
And then, like, my, you know, my father would, he was going to church, and I wasn't really living with him, but he was going to church, and he would, like, kind of, so those are elements of this conversation. Is I gotta go to church.
It's being part of a church is part of Christian discipleship. And in that word discipleship, there's this word discipline, which is, it's a discipline to go to church.
What would be so great about actually going to a church is, like, you start going to a church so that when you do need, like, to be prayed for, when you have something to be prayed for about, you have a place to just say that.
You're dead on right, Grizz, and that is what the church is for. To know and be known, to love and be loved, to have a place to go where people can pray for you, where they will welcome you in. And this is, again, part of why I'm, you know, I want churches to have estuaries, because it is, I know that it is difficult in many churches for people to, in a sense, come in and bring their real self. And what I mean by that is, have to say what's on their mind, or you can't wrestle with them. It's like, you know, so Plato, you know, as John reminds us, is broad, so he's a wrestler. You can't wrestle over a screen. So maybe if it's paintball for Jesus, maybe it should be wrestling with Plato. Because, and in church, in a real space, now often it doesn't happen. I understand that. But at least there's a chance to actually have a relationship with grit. And that's part of why churches are local. They're relational, they're face to face, they're in real life.
Said about why would young people want to go to church, and I feel like I want to have some kind of dynamic message or something that if they do find some reason to come, you know, I'm trying to fish, so I'm throwing bait and I'm trying to hook somebody. It's what Paul is doing too. It's, he said about being evangelical. It's evangelism of some sort.
Well, fishers of men is the
yes.
Is the promise, yes?
Yes, correct.
He's possessed. We did go to church today. I took communion.
I don't go to church to think or to rationalize God. I go to church to worship Him, right? And that's, I'm happy with that. I'm very happy with that. And afterwards, during coffee hour, we can all argue about the God of our understanding, right?
Yeah. But I think you're right. I think that the wild twin, I mean, the thing that led to my sort of dawning to consciousness of Christianity was a 101 day vigil that I did in a forest. And I went into the forest.
You don't have to go crazy. Yeah. You actually have to go, you have to humble yourself and do it right here, right now, right?
Get up. I like how Father Spemann talks about it for the life of the world. He says it starts when you get up and get ready and you walk or you go to church. You start these, those are simple. I get up, I brush my teeth, I take a shower, mm-hmm. I put on clothes, I go, the things of life, and we're ascending up into heaven. You're